Welcome to our episode of the Leaders Playlist. Today we are joined by Stephen Dowling. Stephen is the founder and owner of ETM. He is an educator, he's a sense maker, and he's a problem solver. Stephen is the Learn to Unlearn global partner for the author Barry O'Reilly. Today we're talking to Stephen on the topic of Untapped. Welcome, Stephen. Thank you for joining us today. Can you please tell us the story of Stephen?
Thanks, Renee. No, lovely to be here with you guys here today. You can probably tell immediately from my accent. I'm an Irishman living here in Melbourne. I've been here probably 15 or so years. Born and educated in Dublin. And then I was lucky enough to get a chance to sort of move around to a number of different places before moving here to Australia. I lived in London, Brussels, Hong Kong, and then set up shop here in Australia. From a work point of view, I started off life as an accountant, a management accountant working in industry. And then I was looking for a bit more excitement and I fell into project delivery work and I loved that. I thought it was just great. I loved the cut and thrust of it. Got to the stage of starting with small projects, got to managing really big transformational projects, big ERP type implementations. And then when I came to Australia, I wanted to do something different. I had a bit of grey hair because I was managing these big things. And I thought, no, I want to do something different. And I always enjoyed the coaching side of my role. So when I came to Australia, I said, OK, I'm going to set up a business, an education business. And obviously my background was in project delivery. And I thought, OK, I feel people weren't doing this very well, I felt. And I set up a business which was all about teaching people best practice project delivery. And, you know, and that was my real passion. I think, you know, I'm a passionate educator. I'm sure we'll talk about it today because I've sort of gone on this journey where initially I was all about project management. And then I realized that, you know, while that had a lot of value, then I realized there was some big missing gaps. And I then went down this journey to try and understand agile and lean, new ways of thinking and working. And, you know, and I think there's a quote behind me in my office here by Einstein. And it basically says, if you can't explain it simply, you don't understand things well enough. So that's really something that really gets me going. I love being able to try and simplify, distill things down into simple sort of concepts, and then be able to educate and, you know, provide that understanding and awareness to people. So hopefully that gives you a little bit of a background of where I'm coming from.
Yeah, it does. Thank you. Can you also tell the audience how you became involved in the Unlearn work with Barry O'Reilly?
Yeah, it's really interesting because I sort of, as I went on this sort of journey myself of sort of trying to make sense out of things, and especially when I got heavily into the agile and the lean stuff, because to me, when I really got to understand it, I realized this is a no-brainer. Like, this is just, this kind of way of thinking and way of working is just something that people had to embrace when you're given the reality of kind of a fast-changing world and then being able to get the best out of people. And I was looking at this thinking, and I was looking at, like, the manifesto's been around for over 20 years. Why has this not been more widely adopted, you know, through organizations all the way from top to bottom? And I came to the conclusion that there was two big issues that I felt were there. One was there was sort of a lack of understanding and awareness around some of the really basic stuff about it. And then the other one was, I did a presentation actually probably 2 years ago, and I went around a number of different conferences, and the title of the presentation was Mindset is the Biggest Issue by a Country Mile. And it was all about, you know, we hadn't really been able to successfully tackle the mindset, the beliefs, especially at the more senior level in organizations. And to me, this was the massive challenge that I was seeing that wasn't really being successfully addressed. And then when Barry brought out his book called Unlearn, I thought, and he introduced the whole concept of, you know, being open and willing to unlearn the past and then relearn the new. I just thought this was absolutely a fantastic way to start the conversation, especially with the more senior leaders, where you sort of just introduce them to this concept of unlearning, you know, being able to let go of the past whenever things change or reality changes. And you could do it in a fairly non-threatening kind of way. So I just thought that was such a great way to enable the conversation, you know, because, you know, as you, you know, both yourself and Dave will know, you know, there's huge challenges in organizations where people are still stuck in the old ways of thinking, you know, at a senior leadership level and then across all the functional areas, finance, procurement, HR, group risk and compliance. They're still operating in the old ways of thinking. And we haven't really been able to shift them. And to me, so that's really where, you know, I want to try and, you know, move, I want to try and move the dial in a little way. And maybe that's very bold of me, but I just think the unlearning and relearning concept is a really great way that can sort of hopefully, you know, provide a catalyst to really start addressing this mindset issue in a much better way. That's sort of where I came from.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And Barney's another Dubliner, by the way, isn't he?
He is. He comes from Skerries. He's a tough man. Yeah, he's a tough man. Comes from Skerries.
Wouldn't have picked Skerries, but there you go.
Yeah, he is. He's such a great guy. He's I have just so much time for Barry. I came across him probably about 5 or 6 years ago. He came here when he did his Lean Enterprise book with Jez Humble and Joanne Malasky. And he was running a workshop here, a Lean Enterprise workshop. And I thought, oh, I've got to go and sort of see it because I'm a huge fan of the book. And then, of course, afterwards, after the workshop, we all went for beers and I got to know him then, you know, personally. It was just fantastic. So yeah, no, it was great.
Yeah, I seen him talk at Agile Australia a couple of years ago. It was a good talk. And I'm a big fan of his podcast. I listen to it again, which is called Unlearn.
Yeah.
A little plug for it. So the topic of today's podcast is Untapped. I'm just wondering, what does Untapped mean for you?
Yeah, it's, I think, you know, it comes back to what we've just been talking about. Like, you know, when you think about it, I probably would put a word there, untapped potential. Because to me, I really strongly personally believe that all of us, each one of us, has the capability and the potential to be amazing at something. We all have this sort of capability, like we're all walking around with one of the most complex organs on the planet. You know, our brain is the most incredible thing and the capability that's there for people, you know, and you know, you think about what's the biggest weapon that each of us has to be able to evolve and adapt. It's our mindsets, our beliefs and the behaviors we have. And you look at all of the work that's been done, you know, and all the work they're doing now in neuroscience and plasticity and stuff. You can change your brain, it can evolve and it can adapt. And there's a book that I've got just behind me on the shelf here. And this is sort of, you know, when I look at the brilliant stuff Barry's done around the unlearning, we're taking that now to the next level. Because to me, you've got to blend in neuroscience and what's the latest thinking in neuroscience and how do we operate? And there's an amazing guy called Bo Lotto. People might have come across him. He's got a number of TED Talks to his name now. He's an absolutely amazing guy. But he wrote a book a couple of years ago called Deviate. You know, how do you help people deviate, you know, move from one direction to another? And, you know, and I remember when I started going through this and I started trying to, you know, unlock the kind of thinking that, you know, in your brain and trying to help people to sort of build understanding and awareness of, you know, why we do what we do. You know, and we're all, like, we don't realize it, but we're all operating on autopilot most of the time. This is the way our brain is conditioned based on, you know, past experiences. And just that fact of educating people to sort of see, well, you know, why do you do what you do? And it's like we all have assumptions that we make about things. And those assumptions then drive the beliefs that we have. And those beliefs then drive our behaviors. And our brain, you know, you know, needs to be able to, like, first of all, it's all about trying to keep you alive. So it's kind of always trying to predict the future, and it's always trying to jump to conclusions. And then the other thing is, it's the nerve center for everything. So it's controlling all of your systems in your body. So it's always about trying to conserve energy, and that's why it's operating on autopilot most of the time. So to me, educating people to understand more about how this works is, I believe, the first step. And I just think, I remember walking down the street one day, and I remember looking, and it was a busy street, and I remember looking at everybody walking down the street, thinking to myself, you know, how many people do not really realize how much potential and capability they could have, you know, and they're all operating without realizing it, operating on autopilot with old ways of thinking and old ways of doing things. And you just have to look at all of the great work around Carol Dweck, growth mindset, fixed mindset. Simon Sinek talks about infinite mindset. You know, like, this is the biggest weapon that we've all got. And, you know, and I just, so I just feel like capability, just helping people to sort of go on this journey is just, I don't know, I feel like this is my purpose and my mission to help try and do it. And I just think that whole, you know, unlearning and relearning is a great way to start the whole journey when it comes to trying to do it.
We're a bit kind of slave to habit, aren't we? It was like, we just automatically autopilot. There's a trigger, there's the routine, and we're trying to get to that reward that we get the thing done. We don't, I think it's, and I don't know if it's Barry who says it, but I think it's at the start of his podcast or whatever it is. In order to think differently, you have to act differently.
Absolutely. And it's, and this is the thing, you can't talk your way to it. You've got to behave. Everything starts with, you're absolutely right, Dave, behaving, acting differently. Because then when you act differently, that then has the impact of changing your perspective of how you see things, because you're doing something. And then once you change your perspective, then that then will obviously affect the way you see things, and ultimately will impact your mindset, which then over the longer term and the more habitual kind of change your behavior. But you're absolutely right. It has to start with you doing stuff. And you know, that's what we say with unlearning. You can't unlearn in a room. You've got to actually be out there doing stuff. It's so important. Yeah.
As agile coaches, you know, Dave and I, speaking on behalf of Dave here, but, you know, we go into organizations and we're working with teams, whether they're delivery teams or they're leadership teams. And I personally find that it's, I don't want to say easy, but it feels easier to change the mindset of the people in the delivery teams when it comes to different ways of working, whether it's using Scrum or whatever. But it's really challenging to shift that mindset for the leaders, because they're so under pressure that they don't have the time to even stop and think, how can I do this differently, or what else is out there that could help with this? So they just stick to what they know, and they continue to just be on autopilot, because they just, and then it's just a never-ending cycle, and nothing gets better, and they get more and more stressed. Yeah. And closer to, you know, previous episodes we've spoken about leaders being close to that breaking point, especially at the moment with COVID and stuff, because there's just so much pressure, and yeah, there's no pause for them. Have you had any experience with working with those leaders to help them stop? Do you have any tools or techniques to help them stop and pause and figure out what they could do differently to shift that mindset?
Yeah, that's such a great point, Renee. And you're so true. Like, it's so true. Like, trying to help those senior leaders. And to me, because this is the real challenge. Because if those leaders, if we can't help them to evolve and to change their thinking, then we've got a massive problem. Because I will argue really strongly that when it comes to trying to change the end-to-end system of work that everybody operates, it's the leaders have the power to be able to influence and change that. And to me, that is a huge driver of how everything's going to work. And if we can't get them to sort of see that, you know, that old way of thinking, an old way of organizing, designing, funding, you know, rewarding, all that kind of stuff. If we don't start to tackle those, then the system, which is the biggest influencer of people's behavior, is never going to change. And to me, this is why I think, you know, and what's worked for me, the clients I'm working with now, is this introducing them to this concept of unlearning and relearning. And then Barry has a really simple but really powerful three-step cycle of unlearning, which is like trying to, it's like an iterative cycle where you just say, okay, the first step is you've got to now be open and willing to challenge your thinking and your assumptions. And then once you're, because that's the whole thing. I use the analogy of like a water bottle. If you know, if you think of your capability, your knowledge, your skills and everything, and a senior leader, if you are not willing to open, like, and you think of a full bottle of water, that's like all of us at the moment. Everybody's absolutely smashed. You've got, you know, you haven't space to do anything, like what you've just been saying, Renee. So the first step is you've got to be willing to take the tap off it and empty some water out. Because if you're not willing to let go, then you're not going to be in a position to be able to take in something new. Because learning isn't always a compounding activity. If you've got things that fundamentally disagree with what your old way was in the past, the first step has you've got to be willing to let go. So this is simple three-step thing is, one, you've got to be willing to let go, challenge some thinking. Then the relearn is all about, well, let's try and experiment, let's design a little behavior experiment to try and learn, and then we basically iterate around this cycle. And it's all about getting them to just step in and be brave and courageous to try something small. And to me, this is the thing, because we haven't really, well, in my experience, and like what you were saying, Renee, it's just those leaders are just, I've been operating this way. I've been very successful. I got to the top of the tree, you know, doing what I'm doing. So now, you know, I feel like that's the, you know, because it goes back to your brain, safety. You feel like that's the way I've got to operate. And you know, and it's, again, we just know that the reality of the world that we're all living in now is different to what it is. And that old world, industrial, mechanistic management model that's embedded across so many traditional organizations, that is just broken. That is absolutely broken. And we've got to challenge and help to try to sort of unwire that. Because if we can't, and I see this, I'd love to know if you would agree with me, I just see this playing out in most organizations where they go on these kind of transformations, agile, digital, whatever you want to call it, but you're trying to, you know, put in place these 21st century organizations, but you're leaving in place these old world thinking, and it's like anchors of the past. You know, if you don't tackle those, you're going to start doing things and you're going to start moving in the right direction. But then the old world's just going to pull you back. You know, old ways of procuring, contracting, old ways of funding, you know, old ways of rewarding people. And you know, and we've got to tackle these areas. Otherwise, we're just not going to, you know, and I just see it playing out in some really big transformations here in Melbourne. And they've been going on these transformation journeys. But when you actually uncover it and you say, well, how successful have they been? And I just don't think they've been anywhere near successful, really. And they're just, they're, because when you ask those hard questions about have they really tackled these really tough areas, have they? I don't see that they have.
They just change the tools that they're using, and then because those tools are known for being agile tools, then tick, they're done now, and all they've done is made those tools reflect the way that they work. They've always worked, and they're not really changing anything except for maybe throwing in a couple of stand-ups, which yep. turn into micromanaging kind of status updates anyway. So, yeah, it's not good.
Yeah. And then, you know, like when you think about it, and one of the things that I'm really passionate about, and I'm sure you are, like you look at the kind of rate of change that's been happening and what's going to be happening. Like it is just phenomenal. The next 15 years are going to be unbelievable in terms of the level of change that's happening. You know, you've got, you know, this exponential technology, digital wave that's coming. COVID has acted like an accelerant. It's like you've poured petrol on this whole digital technology thing. But that's only one part of it. There's all this other stuff that's happening, you know, around cryptocurrencies and there's just just so much change that's coming. And I just really worry about organizations because, you know, this thing, look, as humans, it's so hard to get your head around exponential change because we're wired for this kind of linear sort of growing kind of thing. But when you look at what's happening in some of the spaces, like, it is just phenomenal. And it's the convergence is the big thing because all of these things are converging together and then the network effect is happening. So this thing is taken off in such a big way. And, you know, we think we've seen a lot. We've seen nothing in terms of what's coming over the next 5, 10, 15 years, I reckon. What do you think?
I was going to say, there's some really interesting points. For me, I'm just going to step back a little bit, is that the organizations, when we talk about transformation, they target one area, and it's normally software development. And I think we'll make software development agile, right? And we'll think, but it's, you've got to attack the system and the structure as well. You've got to attack the things around it, as you said, the HR, the procurement. Like, there's no point having a DevOps culture that can, you know, deliver pieces of code or functionality in, you know, 2 to 3 times a day or more than that if you had take 6 months to get a developer in because of your procurement, or the batch size of your requirements are so big that they have to be broken down and never actually get a thin slice delivered. And I think that's the problem, right? It's all stuck in one little part. To the point about the, I said, what I'm going to get is, what do you think is holding leaders back in organizations from realizing their potential? Because I would say their argument would be, well, I've got to being a leader by doing the exact opposite of what you were just telling me to do. Yeah. And this organization is successful. We're making money rather than, in opposition to what you've just told me to do. What do you think is holding them back from embracing it?
Yeah, it's such a good question, Dave. And I just think I think it goes back to that whole thing of, you know, that kind of wanting certainty. And, you know, just, it's like you're sort of frozen. Because, like you say, you've been successful in the past. But then when you look at the best leaders, like, I will argue that, you know, what do we need? What are the biggest attributes we need now for leaders for the 21st century? And I will argue the three biggest attributes, I believe. One is curiosity. They've got to be curious. They've got to have courage. And you've got to have humility. And to me, these are the three biggest things. Curious. What's worked in the past, maybe it won't work in the future. And this is the whole idea, because if your fundamental reality changes, the reality changes, then what has worked in the past may not work in the future. And we've got to be open, willing to adapt and to evolve. And boy, oh boy, has the reality changed? And will it keep changing? Absolutely. So if you're not curious, open and willing and brave to change things. Like, there's one amazing company, I'm sure you probably know of them, Haier, H-A-I-E-R, appliance manufacturer. This is probably one of the companies that I've been following very closely that I think is absolutely amazing. There's a fantastic guy called Ruman Zhang who's been running Haier for the last 20 years or so. And if you look at the way Haier, they have evolved. Like, there's been about 4 or 5 kind of evolutions of Haier. You know, and this guy, Ruman Zhang, I think is one of the most leading management thinkers in the world. And he has been this kind of brave leader that's been willing to take them on these evolutions. The evolution that he's just done now would blow your mind. It's an 80,000 or so person organization manufacturing, and he's completely inverted his whole organizational pyramid, and he's now created this organization. And if you look at agile, lean thinking, you know, best practice leadership, this is a picture of what, like, big organizations need to look like in the future. But the courage that was needed for him to do that, because I remember reading about it when he told, he was at the one of the Drucker management forums, and he told them what they were going to do. They all thought he was nuts. And, you know, but he said, no, this is the future. And he was like that brave and courageous to do this. And now everybody's, like, in Stanford, they're writing, you know, case studies about what they're doing in Haier. Like, but we need more of that courage in these leaders. They've got to be willing. But this is the thing. They're all on these bloody bonuses and stuff like that, and they're close to retirement. So, oh, I don't want to change that. So that's a huge challenge we've got, isn't it? Like, yeah, I don't know. Yeah. That's what I see. Yeah.
Yeah. Driven by what they're measured on. And yeah, sadly, the money reward still a driver for a lot of people, or most people. I think it's, as you were saying, Stephen, I think a lot of the leaders are paralyzed. They don't know what to do. They don't have the courage to ask help. They don't. They will bring coaches in and they'll say, you know, we want, they'll give you this goal or outcome that they're looking for that's worded perfectly. It has the right words in it. That's very, you know, it's very visionary, and they don't understand what it means. They don't understand the work that goes into it, and they don't understand how they have to change their ways, their behaviors, their mindset as well. They don't think, I don't even think some of them think they need to change. It's just everyone else's problem. And it's, Dave and I were just reading a book recently around the mind traps that leaders have, whether it's ego or control or having to have agreement or always being right. And I think, you know, when you get these leadership teams, you know, one leader on their own is maybe doable. But when you get a bunch of them all on the same team and they've all got different ideas and they've all come up the ranks, they've all put it in the hard yards, they've all got there, you know, they got there through blood, sweat and tears, and they're not willing to budge. They want it their way. So then they just, you know, argue for hours and hours and hours and never come up to any agreement. I think it's a shame. I was thinking before, just reflecting on something you said before, I think it's a shame that with COVID, you know, it taught a lot of people, hopefully a lot on the planet, that what's important in life. It's shifted a fair few mindsets around, from a personal perspective, what's important, you know, spending time with family and doing the things that make you feel good, that well-being side of things. Shame that organizations didn't have the same reflection, I guess. Yeah, this is what we're trying to do on a personal level, but we're just going to still, you know, as soon as you log on to work, we're still hammering the old way. We're not looking at changing our way of, you know, there's no well-being of the organization. How can we make the organization evolve? Looking at ourselves, how we can make ourselves evolve, but not when you log on to work. Just make sure you stand up for 5 minutes every half an hour and there's your well-being.
I think that is, yeah, I could not agree more, Renee. And what I'm doing now is, because I just think it will be the biggest tragedy if we don't, this nightmare COVID world we've been going through for 18 months. And I, you know, I'm running a program, actually an unlearning program now, for one of the biggest, actually biggest private company here in Australia. And one of the things I'm doing in it is I'm putting the mirror up to everybody to say, look in the mirror and look at how you've evolved and adapted over the last 18 months in your personal life, but in your work life as well. Look at how you've changed and adapted. And this is the thing, because to me, this is goes back to our original point about, you know, the capability in all of us. We have, as human beings, we are the most adaptive creatures on the planet. And we've shown this now with COVID, how quickly and how fast we've all adapted. And obviously not having a choice has been a big thing, because we've had to do it. We've had no choice. And now I'm sort of saying, well, this is, and Barry has a great quote where he talks about the truth about disruption is it doesn't apply to organizations, it applies to individuals. So now what we've got to do is we've got to take personal responsibility to continually disrupt ourselves on a periodic basis. And this is where we believe this whole cycle of unlearning is so important, because it helps you, gives you a pattern of thinking that helps you to continually disrupt yourself. Because like it or not, the world is going to keep changing and evolving, and it's going to do that in a faster rate. So if you want to stay current and relevant, you've got to be willing and able to be able to do that, to continually evolve and adapt. And I look at myself now, like I'm doing this podcast in a studio, a virtual studio that I created when COVID hit. So now all of the workshops I'm doing, and I'm running this program with this client, and they're in Singapore, they're in Australia, they're in New Zealand, and we're just running it. I'm running it out of my studio here now. And it's like incredible how, you know, what you can do when you have to do it. And I just think, you know, it'll be a tragedy if we all don't use this as a catalyst to help us, I believe.
Yeah, 100% agree.
Mm. Yeah. Well, I think to your point, and we're going with this, right, that the driver for all the change across the 80 months has been COVID. And I think it's caught us there has to be a sense of urgency and change, right? There has to be something that makes you want to get somewhere to change. And you said, like, there's either signals from the marketplace or there is doom on the horizon that's it, right? Look at Nokia and all that. But they chose to ignore it. So I think your point around that curiosity is good. But if you don't have the other three parts, you don't have that courage or the humility to be open to it, then it's not enough to have just one of those three. You have to have a blend of all of them. And I'm just wondering, what do you think will be, I know we said a constant change, what do you think will be the new driver for companies into the future? The thing that they need, they feel that will become, whatever happens, this is the one thing that they can't ignore.
Well, I don't know if you guys will agree. I will think, when you think about companies now trying to survive and exist into the future, talent, being able to attract and keep the best people, I think now is the big thing. And you look at, like, if you don't create the right kind of organizations where you will be able to attract and keep the best people, you're going to really struggle. And you can see companies now that are not, you know, embracing better ways of working and being more flexible. And like you talked about wellness and stuff, Renee, those companies, there's going to be companies that will be offering this to people. And those other companies that are not willing and they're going to stuck in the old world, you can just see them over time. Obviously, it's going to take time, but they're going to get starved of resources. And there's going to be this massive shakeout in thing. You know, and you look at all this new great talent coming out of you know, colleges and this thing and looking for people. And I just think that's going to be, to your point, Dave, I feel like that's going to be one of the massive drivers that's going to force people to say, we've got to get our act together. We've got to get this. And it's one thing talking about it, but then you've got to make sure you create the organization, the end-to-end system within the organization that will support this kind of way of working. And it's not just you're playing lip service to it. You've got to make sure that the basics are right. And if all of these things aren't working together, then you can see it just creates a toxic environment. So we've got to get the basics right to enable this. Do you understand? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, definitely. And it's even because COVID has shown that you can work online now, and you can work in different time zones. Time zones doesn't really matter anymore either. It's a lot more accepted in organizations. So if you can't attract your talent, then they are just going to go shopping. And there's so many more opportunities now because of the online nature of jobs and we're working wherever you want. Doesn't matter where you live. I'm seeing that in organizations myself as well. People are just going elsewhere because it's a better culture, better way of working. They get more work-life balance, all of that sort of stuff. So yeah, it's definitely coming. What's one piece of advice you would give a new leader when it comes to untapping into their potential?
I just think it goes back to what I was just saying before, those three things. I would just say trying to, you know, make sure that you sort of really build that curiosity gene. You know, to me, curiosity is a superpower. Like, you've got to culture nurture that, you know, and so curiosity, you know, that humility that you've got to have, you know, and to me, and be brave and try things. So those three things, you know, trying to cultivate curiosity, be brave, courageous, and then just, you know, that humility. humility, you know, and just be open to stuff. I just think, to me, they're a leader now for the future. To me, I just think they are just so important. And if you don't start nurturing them within yourself, then I just think you're in trouble. I really do.
100% agree. When you're saying curiosity, I was thinking of a song. I'm sure there was a TV show. I'm sure of it, when I was a kid, and the intro was Curiosity, and I just Googled it. It's not coming up, so maybe I made that up. I don't know. It's going to bug me now, though.
I keep on getting the band Curiosity Kill the Cat in my head for some reason. You know that band? Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what it is.
Yeah. Can I just, there's one thing I'd love to share. There's a book that I came across. Have you guys heard of this book called Out of the Maze? Out of the Maze. I bet you've heard of the other one called Who Moved My Cheese?
Yeah, we've heard of that one. Yeah.
So Who Moved My Cheese was, it was one of the best-selling books of all time by Dr. Spencer Johnson. When he wrote the book, and it was all about helping people, you know, adapt to change and all that kind of stuff, and it was so, so successful. And it's actually a sad story, because Spencer Johnson, he felt like there was something that was missing, or there was another step that was needed. And this is where this book called Out of the Maze, because if you remember the characters in the book, there was Hem and Haw, and Haw was the one who found his way out of the maze, and Hem got stuck. And this book, Out of the Maze, is all about how do you get unstuck. And it was actually very sad, because Spencer died of pancreatic cancer. So it was published 2 years ago after he died. But it's absolutely brilliant. And to me, it's all about helping people to get unstuck out of their brain. I'd highly recommend it to people. My son, my little 10-year-old son has read it, you know, and I just think it's absolutely brilliant. And it's sort of, you know, it helps people, you know, because I do that on my own learning program. I use this as pre-reading. I just say, listen, you got to read this first, because this really sets the scene for what you're doing. So I just thought I'd share that.
Beautiful. One for the book club, I think.
Yeah, definitely. One of the books that inspired this episode being called Untapped, or this topic being Untapped, was a book that Dave and I read a while ago called Untapped Agility by Jesse. I don't know how to say his last name. It's F-E-W-E-L-L. And yeah, so that was what inspired us. And it's a similar thing from an organization point of view. What's stopping organizations wanting to go through a transformation? These are the things that you always hear, and all of this is why they happen, and all of that sort of stuff, and how you can get out of those traps. So that's a good one to read as well. This is the book episode.
That was the Irish episode, but there you go.
Bit of both. So
let's go to our songs. I don't know if you've listened to a past podcast, Stephen, but music is such a powerful tool. We're finding many, many people use in different ways. And we like to ask our guests what song you listen to when you're stuck and you'd want to try and find that potential. So what's that song for you?
Yeah, there's one, it's by U2. It's called A Beautiful Day. And I just love that one, because it's all about just positivity and just you know, trying to sort of, and I just, that's one I listen to a lot whenever I'm doing stuff. And I just, I'm a huge fan. I thought that was a good one.
Dave, what's your song for Untapped?
Right. I have to laugh at this, because I'm going to go with an Irish band as well. It's not U2. The Script, they have a song called Superheroes. And there's some of the lyrics. It's like, you see the fire in their eyes, and it's because you're stronger than you know, or she's stronger than you know, changes on the verse. But I think it is funny. You see people, when they talk about something that they're really passionate about, and they're getting held back from doing it, you can see that they get animated. You can see that, you know, passion in their eyes, the fire, and they just need that little nudge, right? Or some to remove that little blocker for them. I think that's the thing for me, is if you can do that for someone, you untap, you just get that potential to get realized, right? So that's my song. This is the Irish episode, so I just got to get used to it.
It's not.
So Renee, what would your song be?
Yeah.
My song, so this happened to me this morning at gym. Katy Perry, Raw song came on. I was struggling. I was not enjoying the class at all. That song came on, and all of a sudden I was like a tiger, and I was roaring, and I found a whole heap of potential / energy that I didn't know I had. So there you go. There's mine.
Brilliant.
So Stephen, what book are you reading at the moment?
There's a book I'm reading, which I've got over here. It's called Strategic Sourcing in the New Economy. I just did a course with an amazing lady, Kate Vitasic, over in University of Tennessee. Talks about New Age Procurement. So that's my bedside reading at the moment.
Who's that one by?
It's by three people. It's by Bonnie Keith, Kate Vitasic, Carl Manruff, and actually Janine Kling as well. So it's four people. Nice. That's really good stuff.
So on to the next one. What is your favorite smell?
Smell? Oh, gosh. I remember myself and my wife went to France one time, and we had this lovely holiday in Provence where they had these fields of lavender. And that's always stuck with me. I just love the smell of lavender.
Did you sleep well?
I did.
On the
yeah,
holiday?
Very well. Yeah, yeah, we did. With lots of wine. There was lots of wine in the region as well, which helped.
It's probably nothing to do with the lavender. Probably more lavender than the Bordeaux.
Yeah, Chateauneuf de Pape. I always remember it. Yeah.
Nice.
As a kid, what was your favorite toy?
You asked that before, and I didn't have one. I really struggled. I can't put my finger on one. I don't know what that says about me, but I didn't have one. There's never, I've played lots of different things, but I couldn't picture, you know, one that I had as a kid. Sorry.
Okay. Stephen, what TV show are you currently binging?
There's one which my daughter actually got me into, The Witcher, and I'm loving it. It's absolutely brilliant. Yeah, it's really good
It's on Netflix, so yeah, that's the one.
It is Netflix, yeah. It's just, actually, we're just coming to the end of it now. I believe they're bringing out a new series, which I'll be dying to watch again.
Final question. The end of the world is coming. What's the very last thing you do?
Very last thing, I think I'd go to my wife and kids and tell them I love them dearly, and then I'd probably open up a can of Guinness and sit down and just
and have a bag of Tato.
Yeah, bag of Tato. That's actually, I didn't even think of that. I love that, Dave. I'd add the bag of Tato.
Some bacon fries.
Have a Cadbury chocolate. I'll give that to you. Your Cadbury chocolate's good. I much prefer Irish Cadbury chocolate than Australian Cadbury chocolate.
Yeah, it's so creamier. It's
yummy.
That's the same with the Guinness, right? Guinness is a lot more creamier in Ireland than it is here. Yeah.
All right. So thank you, Stephen. Thank you for your time. That was an excellent conversation. Really enjoyed it.
Yeah, thanks. Well, I think we hit a few important things there, so I might sort of stir it up a little bit.